paper. That means I'm both a computer scientist and a physicist, and I collaborate with many of the physicists here when it comes to computational work, to numerical analysis, and so on. And I'm going to give you a series of lectures on, well, it's called something Mathematica, but I'm going to make it broader. I'm also going to include things on computational science, numerical analysis, and so on. I don't know what career plans you have. You might be interested only in blackboard physics and think that computers are not relevant for you, but these days it's basically obvious that everybody has to learn how to do computational science, either you yourself or students you will supervise or your collaborators or whatnot. So I think it's good to have a brief introduction. In particular also, since the typical undergrad student curriculum does not involve much about computers, computational physics, unless you have a particular interest in that. Today, I'll begin with an introduction to Mathematica. It's a bit of a strange topic because I assume that more than half of you are familiar with Mathematica, so I have to give you enough detail, enough interesting new things to keep you interested, but some of you may not have used Mathematica before, and I also have to give you an introduction. So let me begin with a show of hands. Who of you is familiar with Mathematica? Okay, and the other way around, who would like to hear some of the beginning details? Okay, yeah, it's approximately as I thought. So I want to view this as a bit of a tutorial, not as a lecture. So please interrupt me at all times. And if you have questions or your neighbor have questions, you can talk to each other and so on. So you should all have Mathematica installed on your laptops, and you can start it and type something in. And this actually is a Mathematica notebook, as you see, that I just started. And let me jump right in. So let's see how this works. So is this large enough, the font size here? Can you read that in the back? Should I make it larger? No one complains. That means it's good. And if you want to evaluate something, you need to press Shift Return or Shift Enter. So 2 + 3 = 5. Who would have thought? The square root of 4 = 2. And the square root of 2 can't be evaluated, so it's the square root of 2 again. And n is a function that evaluates something numerically. It makes an approximation with about 15 digits. So the numerical value is, well, it's more like 6 digits, but there you go. Yes. And as you know, the names of functions in Mathematica start with uppercase letters. That's important. In whatever C, you'd be lowercase letters. And function arguments have to give in square brackets. And that plus the shift return are kind of the three things that catch you when you're really a beginner in Mathematica. And of course, Mathematica has all sorts of tutorials. There's a built-in help function and so on. So I'm not going to dwell too much on these low-level details. I assume if you're interested, you can talk to your neighbors, or you can Google for some tutorial. There are also online video tutorials, if that's what you prefer. There's a function, a value pi, which is just represented as pi. It has a numerical value that's given at 6 digits here. And if you want to do 1,000 digits, you can do that. And a million digits works as well. Of course, displaying a million digits is kind of slow, so I'm not going to do that. Mathematica can handle large numbers, so 10 to the 100 is not a problem at all. And the result then looks like that of this expression. That's 10 to 100 plus 10 to 101, so two digits in the two ones in the beginning, and then many zeros, probably 100 zeros at the end. Yeah, that could be right. While groups of 3 and 1 left over sounds like 99 plus 1 and so on. That works. The strength of Mathematica, of course, is not evaluating expressions, but the, what's it called? The symbolic algebra that it can handle. That is, you can have unknowns in there, variables like x and y, and Mathematica can then handle that, simplify expressions, and also solve expressions. So x plus 1, since Mathematica does not know the value of x, is actually just x plus 1. Mathematica likes to sort things, so it's 1 plus x in that case. And if you look exactly, you might not see it here, but you would see it on your screen. Mathematica also uses different colors to indicate whether it knows about a variable or not. So the 1 is displayed in black because it's known, and the x is displayed in blue, fortunately a dark blue only, because Mathematica does not know that value. And if you type in an expression, it's always a good idea to keep an eye for that, because if something is black and you think Mathematica shouldn't know about it, then maybe it's some built-in value, or maybe you accidentally assigned a value to it, and that of course could confuse further calculations. And if you get confused that way, one good way of getting your out is you go to evaluation and you quit the local kernel. That means Mathematica forgets all that it knows about the variables and expressions, but the notebook that you're using here still remains the same. So we quit the local notebook, and you see the display doesn't change, but if we had actually set a variable to a value, this would be gone, and then you can reevaluate the notebook from the top. There's also a nice function for that. sell. Now what is it? Evaluation, evaluate notebook. Then you redo all the calculation afresh. Yes?
If you had defined a function before, would you still have a function or?
The function, oh, let's just do that. Let's define a function here. So this is all interactive. F of x equals whatever, 2x plus 1. And you see f is blue. I hit enter. F becomes black. And that is the function. And if we evaluate f of 4, it's 9. So if you quit the kernel, it's really brutal. I mean, there's a confirmation there. There's for a reason. And you see that f is blue again. And if we ask for the value f of 4, then Mathematica only know it's f of 4 because it doesn't know anything about it, so it's just returned unevaluated. But if you evaluate the whole notebook, and if you didn't delete that definition here, you can set f again, and it turns black again. And if you then evaluate this one here, then it's blue again. And oh, this notebook that I'm using here, I'm going you to send it to your tutors, and it's going to be available for download later on. So right now, you don't need to type anything. I'd rather have that you ask questions and follow with me. And we're going to have a tutorial in the afternoon. And there, we're going to do something interactive. And yeah, I understand if some of you might be bored with some of the topics. So maybe I'll find something more interesting to do in the afternoon, some of the cooler Mathematica features, for example, whatever, image manipulation or something. And or you can do something else during the tutorial. Let's continue here. If you set x to 5, there we go. Right? I prepared that. Then x becomes blue. And then if you evaluate x plus 1, it becomes 6, of course, because x has the value 5. If you assign dot to a variable, that means you unset it. Then it becomes blue again. And then x just has the value of x because it doesn't have a value. We just talked about that. Okay. There are also some other things. For example, the millionth prime number is this one here. Obviously, Mathematica has very sophisticated, fast algorithm built in for prime numbers. Or maybe it just knows the first million prime numbers by heart. Could also be, who knows that. You can solve equations. So here you have an expression, x squared plus 1 equals 0. You know that if you square something, you need to use this hat. And the equal sign has two meanings, as is usual in computer languages. One is an oh man, I don't know how to switch off the sound. I have to do it here. Okay. A single equal sign is actually an assignment operation. So if you want to compare something for equality, you have to type two equal signs here. And so x squared plus 1 equals 0. And we solve for x. You all know what the solution is. What the solutions are, because there are two, minus I and I. And you know that's strange. Hollow I is how Mathematica outputs imaginary numbers. And if you want to input it, you have to use an uppercase I, not the lowercase I. There's this distinction in Mathematica. Anything built in uses uppercase letters, which is, it looks really weird. But the convenient thing is it has so many things built in. If you use lowercase variables yourself, you're not conflicting with anything that's built in. And that's quite convenient. So it's kind of a computer science distinction. So uppercase I is the imaginary unit. It looks really strange. It looks like that then. Mathematica can do limits. So the limit of 1 over n as n goes to infinity is obviously 0. And the sum of 1 over 2 to the n for n from 0 to infinity is OK, I'm telling you things that are much too trivial. That is 2. There's a question mark if you want to get help. For example, about the square root function or the sum function. And if you put your mouse over this double arrow and click on it, then there's a nice, beautifully built-in help system. So this was essentially the very basics of Mathematica to get you started, to begin to find your way around. Now let's talk about some things that are more non-trivial, even if you're very familiar with how to do things on a blackboard. And that is how functions are represented in Mathematica. So defining a function, you do it like this. And the strange thing is that you need to write this underscore after the x. So this f of x is sine of x. And the reason is that x on the left-hand side and on the right-hand side has a very different meaning. On the right-hand side, you want to evaluate it. But on the left-hand side, it's basically just a placeholder. You can define f of x, but you could also define f of a or f of q. And you would define the same function. So the name that you give to the variable in a function has no meaning. It's just a pattern. So x is just the name of the pattern. And patterns in Mathematica are indicated by this underscore. And in fact, all of Mathematica is based on pattern matching. So there are essentially three ways to give a meaning to a computer program. And Mathematica uses pattern matching, and that's one of these three ways. So you can dig deep into that and go far into computer science. And that is probably also one of the reasons why Mathematica is so successful. Because the syntax on top, the uppercase letters and square brackets and so on, that might be a bit weird, but the underlying computational kernel, how the calculation is handled and how the expressions are internally stored, that is very well done, that is really well done, and has a solid foundation. And this is why the package has been so successful for, I don't know how old Mathematica is, probably more than 20 years. So if we define f of x like that, then we can evaluate f of 1, obviously, that's 1. F of x is sine of x, and f of q is sine of q. As I said, that you call the pattern x doesn't have a meaning on the function that is actually defined. And of course, f of 2 pi, Mathematica knows that sine of 2 pi is 0. That's one of the built-in patterns. The pattern probably says if there's a sine function, the argument is a multiple of pi, then you know the exact value. We can define a variable, I call it a here, setting it to 1. The result is 1, and let's define a new function f, which is x plus a. X plus 1, says Mathematica, because it uses the value of a. And then f of 5 is 6. If we unset a, then a becomes blue again. And if we look at f of 5, it is still 6. And the reason here is that at the time when we defined f, Mathematica looked up the value of a and remembered it, even if a later has a different value. This is how it gets a bit complicated. This is the equal sign, I don't know what it's called. You could call it a direct definition. And there's also a delayed definition where you use the colon equal sign here. I'm talking about that function g here. So let's a to 1. Let's set a to 1. And then g of x to x plus a. G of 5 is, of course, 6, like f of 5. But if we unset a and then look at g of 5, the result is 5 plus a. Because if we use this delayed definition, then Mathematica didn't look up the value of a when we defined g. Rather, it continues to remember that we want to look up whatever the symbol a means. And if we undefine a, then Mathematica doesn't know that anymore. And this is one of the key differences, one of the two ways of defining something up here on the top with the equal sign, the direct definition, where the right-hand side is evaluated right away, and the delayed definition with the colon equal sign, where the right-hand side is only evaluated when actually g is evaluated. And that can be quite confusing, but I hope you'll get the hang of it.
Can we use it for a function?
Pardon?
Like then I want now to be like x squared plus a. How do I just write again a formula for f?
Okay, I don't quite understand what you mean, but let's try it out. What do you want to do?
I mean, if I have a big program written with f,
mm-hmm.
I don't want to change f in every step of my program. But I really would like, not changing the name, but I would really like to change the function.
Okay, so that there are kind of two use cases. One is when you're manually experimenting with something. And there, one option is to do it the low level, the brutal way. You just quit your kernel, you change the definition of f, and you reevaluate your whole notebook. That, of course, all works. But it's, of course, I mean, that only works when you use interactively. But the other way would be that you use these delayed definitions everywhere, and then when you change your definition of f and do something else, then it would automatically pick up the value. So let's do something. Let's, for example, define df as the derivative of f. I'm doing this interactively, so it could go wrong. So the prime to apostrophe afterwards takes the derivative. So this assumes that f is a function, and df is then the derivative of that function. It assumes it's a function of one argument. And now let's say f equals sine. Now we have the sine function. And if we look at df, it's the cosine function. That's an internal notation. And now we say f equals whatever, square root. And then if you look at df, then it's this expression, of course. Now, this is not what I recommend you do, because you're having kind of this global thing f, and f depends of this globe, df depends on that global f. So this is really confusing. I mean, in a small notebook it works, but if you have a really large program, then making anything depend on what is currently set or unset is really a bad idea. I was not going to talk about that today, but I'll just mention it. Usually it's better to pass things explicitly. So you wouldn't write df is f prime, but you would rather write df of f equals f prime. And then every time you use df, you pass explicitly in, because then that's less ambiguity in there. It's not as confusing. Okay. So Mathematica also makes a distinction between expressions and functions. So one, for example, is an expression. And if you add an ampersand after an expression, it becomes a function. So an expression is one thing, right? It's a scalar, a real number. This now is a function that is one everywhere. And there's, of course, a fundamental distinction between that. If you have just a single number, you can't take a derivative. But if you have a function that is one everywhere, you can take its derivative, and that is zero everywhere. For example, I can take this function that is one everywhere and evaluate it at 3. The result is, of course, 1. I mean, this is a trivial thing. So we can define f of x to be 2x. What? Oh, I defined f earlier, I guess, right? Let's see whether that works now. Yep. And this is also a function 2x. So if you use this ampersand notation, this is a really shortcut notation, then you have kind of the function, and the variable in that function is called hash. It's just a syntax. So this is also a function that doubles everything. It's kind of the function f of x goes to 2x. So if you evaluate this function at r, you get 2r. If you evaluate it at x, you get 2x. And f of r is, of course, also 2r. Some of you stare now a bit, but this is just the notation. It's a really shortcut notation, but it's quite useful because it's quite compact. Okay. So if you add an ampersand after an expression, whatever the thing is becomes a function. If you write one ampersand, it's a constant function. But the function can also depend on a variable. And this variable is called hash. It's a strange name for a variable, right? It's not x or y, it's just this hash symbol. But they chose it because there's not a conflict. So here, this is a function. You could also write it as x goes to 2x. Or here, hash goes to 2 hash or something. It's just a very strange variable name. So this is a function that doubles everything. It's the same function as we wrote up here. F of x is 2x, except we don't give it a name, right? This function doesn't have a name. It's this anonymous function that we use here with the ampersand.
Why did it give back hash 1?
Pardon? That function can depend on many variables, and they're called hash 1, hash 2, hash 3, hash 4, and so on. And the first one, if you just write hash, Mathematica substitutes hash 1, because it's such a common case that you have a function of just one variable, so you don't need to write hash 1 there. And So this here is a function 2 hash ampersand. It's just a really strange notation for a function x that maps every x to x squared. And if you evaluate it at r, obviously we get 2r, not x squared, 2x. Yes?
Yeah. Usually when I define functions in Mathematica, I use column equal.
Yes.
I use equal. Is there like any difference?
The difference is when the right-hand side of the function will be evaluated. If the function is really simple, something like 2x, there's basically no difference. The difference is only if you use a global variable, as like when I did x plus a, you saw the difference there. But of course, if you define any constant a or something once in the beginning and you don't change it, then it's the same thing. And you can also do other things on the right-hand side on a function. For example, you can evaluate an integral or take a derivative or something. And if you do that, then you probably want to use colon equals, because that integral that you want to evaluate probably depends on the argument that you pass to the function. And if it's evaluated right away, that might not work.
So for example, if I put before n40, if I wrote x equal 4, for example,
That has no meaning because, sorry, that makes no difference because X is defined to be a pattern here. You can see if I highlight that? Yes. So the X on the right-hand side will always be the X on the pattern here. If you define X equals 4 outside, that does not change F because the kind of the local X, that pattern, has a higher precedence and that shadows the global X that you defined earlier. Mm. I can give you an example of what I mentioned. Okay, f of, I should stop calling my functions f, right? G, h, whatever, I, j, k, w, why not? W of n, and let's define it as the derivative of x of n with respect to x. And does that make sense? Well, let's just see what happens, whether there's a difference. I get myself confused sometimes. No, here the derivative has been evaluated right away. Yeah, no, that works. Sorry, yes, go on.
As if x isn't given.
Pardon?
As if x were given the function of n.
Yeah, so this here is an expression in X. So this returns always an expression X, but I won't.
But it's actually a function of N.
Yeah, so W is a function of N, but apparently here it worked nicely. Ah, oof, oof, I should not. I was hoping whether there's a difference if you write it like this, but I don't think there's a difference. W of 4 is 4x cubed, and if you define W like x, then it's the same thing. Yeah. Now, I have trouble finding something where equals and colon equals makes a difference.
Yeah, it does, because if you, for example, had written like x equal 4 like ages ago.
Yes, no, then that would be something, yes.
And that would make it wrong, but that'll, for example, f of if x equals 4, since the beginning of your program, and you put x equal to x, that will give you 4. But let me do 2 times 4, right? But if you put the column equals, that will make Mathematica understand that x is actually the same as the dummy variable that you have in your function.
Do you think so? Okay, let's try it. X equals 4. And then 4 is not a, yeah, no, it's not quite that. If you write x equals 4, then Mathematica replaces x here on both sides. So it's 4 to the n, comma 4. But you can't take a derivative with respect to 4.
But if you put a colon,
then that works. But if I evaluate it, then the same problem happens because x still has a value. Okay. I can't find an example. That, of course, doesn't mean anything, right? There's still a fundamental difference between defining it earlier or later. You just need to be aware of that. So sometimes there's an integral or derivative or something, and you can't evaluate it before you know the value of n of, okay, maybe I should put a self in here, maybe that would work, okay. Okay, let's define it like this. So we are solving the equation x to the n equals 1 for x. And okay, ha ha ha. Yeah, of course, that was too easy. Trivial case. What? Okay, I'm looking for an example where something can't be done unless you know the actual value of x. Okay, let t maybe n solve. Yeah, okay, I'll give up now. okay, I'm going to delete that as to not confuse you later. Okay, and Mathematica can also do linear algebra. There are vectors, arrays, matrices, and so on. So this is the notation for defining a 4x4 matrix where each element is set to 2. It just happens to be that if you define such a matrix with this function array, then you need to give in a function of 2 arguments that define the value of the individual elements of the matrix. So if someone to set everything to 2, you just say 2%. In matrix form, just outputs the matrix in a nice form with 2 parentheses, otherwise you get a list of lists. Yes?
What's the difference between array and table?
On that level here, it's very similar. In table, you have to give an expression and you explicitly give names to the indices, and in array, you don't. Internally, there's a difference, because if you have an array, then all the rows, all the rows have the same length, and all the columns. And with a table, that's not necessarily the case. You can have tables of tables. So the first row has 3 entries, the second row has 2 entries, and so on. And there are also some internal optimizations. So, depending on what the entries of this array is, if you have an array with 1 million elements and each element is a floating point number, then you can store it very efficiently in 8 megabytes in the same way a Fortran would store an array. But if you have a generic expression where you have terms in there, x squared, x plus 1, square root of 2 or something, then that storage wouldn't work. And the switch for the inefficient and then for the powerful storage format to the fast and efficient one that a language like Fortran could use. There may be some differences in whether Mathematica decides to switch or not. So in principle, if you want to invert a matrix or something, Mathematica can do it as fast as Fortran. But Mathematica, of course, can also do the symbolic algebra, which, of course, is much slower than doing the fast number crunching that you can do in other languages. Yes?
Can you create a function of which the image is like a function space? So for example, with what you did before, with the derivative, you made a function where like w of 3 gives you back 3x squared, but I can't evaluate 3x squared.
Oh yes, you can do that. So since that is a bit more complicated, I have prepared another notebook that I was going to show later, if there's time. And I called it operators, functions operating on functions. And this is something where the way you represent a function is, of course, you need to make a choice. And of course, on a blackboard, you write sine of x, and that could be the sine function evaluated of whatever value x has. When you know from context whether x has a value or whether x is a free variable, and x is a free variable, then sine of x is something like a function. But if you write it in Mathematica, you really have to make a distinction between functions and expressions. But in a blackboard, you don't. And this is kind of what I'm slowly trying to guide you to. You need to be aware of the difference. And in many cases, Mathematica allows you to do both. So you can take a derivative of an expression and the derivative of a function. But you have to know what you're doing. For example, to take a derivative of a function, you write sine and then prime, for example. This gives you the cosine function. But you can also take a derivative of sine of x. And sine of x is just an expression in Mathematica's term with respect to x. And here, you have to, of course, give the variable name x, because it's just an expression. So you have to say what is actually the variable. Whereas if you just write sine, then it's clear how to define the derivative, because the sine function is a function of one variable, so it has one partial derivative that you're getting. And here, what you're getting here is, of course, cosine of x. So you can, in Mathematica, work with functions, and the return value is a function again, with this ampersand notation here. Or you can work on expressions, and the result is an expression again. So in many cases, if you actually want to talk about functions returning functions, that first notation up here is more elegant and more powerful, where you actually use functions, not expressions. But many times, when you talk to people that are not that familiar with the distinction between what is a function, what is an expression, and so on, then people prefer this kind of notation, because it looks closer to what you would write on a blackboard using that sloppy kind of notation. So I still remember first year undergrad math when my math professor made this huge distinction between sine of x not being a function. And I thought, yeah, right, let him talk, mathematicians. But actually, when you try to talk to a computer, then these distinctions are actually very, very important. And it's unfortunate. Well, it's kind of really cool that we can handle these ambiguous expressions on a blackboard so successfully. But if you want to write something down really concisely, as is necessary for Mathematica, you need to understand the limitations of the sloppy notation that you use them.
Can you just put like a sign behind that thing to make the function then?
So you can make that a function. No, you can't. But you can write something like function x, comma cosine of x. Yeah, that probably works. I don't know whether you need braces around x. Yeah, that probably works. So let's evaluate that at pi. Yeah, that works. So if you have an expression, and then you use that function thing, then you can do that. And of course, there are a few other ways, but they are more complicated. And I was going to talk about that later, probably near the end today, maybe this afternoon, or maybe in another lecture. OK. Now, I talked about what Mathematica does. So, yes?
Going back to the array, what is the role of the ampersand?
So if you define an array, then that function here expects the size of that array. Here it's a 4x4 matrix that comes out. And the first argument is a function that defines the values of each element. And this function will be called with two arguments, namely the row and the column, and need to return the value of that element. And to set all the elements to 2, you just choose a function that sets everything to 2. I could, of course, also write something like #1, which would be the row index. So then each row would have the value of that row. Or I can use %2, then I get the columns. Or I can do #1 plus #2, then it's the sum of the row or the column. Or I can write 1 over what? Now, I hope I used enough parentheses here. Yep. I think that's the Hilbert matrix. Is that the name? OK, I forgot the name. So let me replay. Well, no, let me write it like that. Still good enough. OK, so I mentioned in the beginning that I want to give an introduction to Mathematica, but also give enough details that those of you who are familiar with Mathematica still learn something new. So now let me go to a bit more technical level, which is how Mathematica represents things internally. That goes slightly into computer science. But if you've seen it, if you heard it, that may help you understand the weirdnesses that you may encounter. So I'm going to talk about how Mathematica represents things internally, and there is a function treeform. Oh, I did not mention that. If you use this // notation, that means apply the function to that expression. So I could also write treeform of that expression, but sometimes it's nicer to write the function afterwards. It's just something I personally prefer. And then this is the output. So the expression is a plus 2b plus 3c. And this is how it's represented internally. So there is one big plus operation with three operands, namely a and the results of the two times operations. And the first times is 2b, and the second times has the arguments 3 and c. So times is a multiplication, plus is an addition, and so on. And you notice that you wrote two plus operations here, but it's still one function call. So internally, Mathematica has one plus function that takes an arbitrary number of arguments, and not just two, as when you write the plus symbol. You can also look at the full form, which is the same thing, except in a nested list notation with square brackets, and not output as a tree. This is a list in Mathematica. Lists are very important in Mathematica. It's kind of the basic data structure for everything. And a list is something like a simple representation of a vector of numbers. If you have a matrix that is internally represented as a list, as a vector of vectors, which is a list of lists. So you can add two lists, 1 plus 3 plus ABC is 1 plus A, 2 plus B, 3 plus C. So corresponding elements are added. You can multiply a list with a number that automatically threads over the list elements. You get 2, 4, 6. Square root, same thing. And there's a function called map that applies a function to each argument of a list. Kind of it maps the function over the list. And you should all be able to understand that notation here. That is that function x goes to 2x plus 1. So it doubles each of the list elements and then adds 1. So the result should be, can you try to figure that out? 1, 2, 3, if you double each element and then add 1, what is the result? It would be something like 3, 5, 7, or so. And if we apply the same function to the list, then it also automatically threads over the list. Here's a table function. Table is how you create a list. So 2i plus 1 is an expression. We did run I from 0 to 3. So we get a list with 4 elements. And each element has the value 2i plus 1. So we get 1, 3, 5, 7, just some odd numbers. And we can also create a matrix here. And that should again be the Hilbert matrix, except we use the different notation here. Earlier we used array, now we use a two-dimensional table. And in the table, we say the index I goes from 0 to 3, j goes from 0 to 3, and each element of the table should have the value 1 over I plus j plus 1. And I think this notation is much easier to understand than the thing with the array up there with the hash 1 and hash 2, if you recall. So this is the same matrix as above. Yep.
What exactly is the slash matrix form for?
So Mathematica has an internal representation of every object and then a particular way to display it. There's a default way to display something, and this way to display something, they are called forms in Mathematica. And matrix forms tries to display matrices in a nicer way. If I get rid of that matrix form, oh no, what was that? Sorry. Try to comment out it. What is it? Oof, oof, oof. Okay. If I comment it out, then a matrix is output like that, which is just a long list. And each of the elements of the list is another list with four elements. So these, of course, are exactly the same numbers, but it's much more difficult to understand because it's one long tapeworm, and you can output it as a matrix form. And there are many different forms. For example, there's a C form or a Fortran form where Mathematica code can output so that it looks like Fortran code. It would almost compile. And there are also other ways to display something more nicely. Since we're talking about that, there's a format. Is it style? No. Cell? Convert to? Oh, yes. There's output form, standard form, traditional form. In output form, it becomes larger, okay. And what, where was I? Cell, yes, convert to. And traditional form, it looks a bit like a textbook, so it uses these serif fonts and so on. So I can alt the which, I don't know, looks fancier, but it's more difficult to read on a computer screen. So let me go back to the output, the regular traditional form. Okay, I might skip some of these things down here because that looks like you're not that interested or keen on the computer science here. Yeah, this might be interesting again. So this solves, looks for roots, solves an equation x squared plus 1 equals 0, solves for x. We had that before, has two solutions, x goes to minus 1, x plus 1. This is a derivative of an expression. You've seen that before. We can have an indefinite integral. We integrate 2x over x. The result is x. Oh, yes. Oh, I was going. Sorry. Yes, x squared, of course, correct. That is a definite integral. We integrate it from x equals 0 to x equals 1. Result is 1/3. Clear f is another way to reset the definition of f to, so that it forgets its value. We can solve differential equations. This is f double prime equals x, and we solve for f of x, and the independent variable is x. So this is 1/6 x cubed plus c, c is one constant, plus x c2, another constant. Yes?
For the
There are no integration constant. So this integrate here would essentially look for the antiderivative. And yes, yes, in a way, it would ignore the integration constant. Yes, I think that's a correct way of describing it. In my mind, I'm so used to that that I didn't even think in that way, but yes. And vSolve solves differential equations. It's rather good in solving differential equations of one unknown ODEs, but of course, not always does a solution exist. Yes?
Can you give boundary conditions?
So yes. Then it would constrain the coefficients. Yes. Let me see whether I have an example. Yes, I have an example further down. And here is another way of writing things down. I should actually use the same example. Can you spot the differences between input 88 and input 90. So here I asked dsolve to solve for f of x. So I get the result for f of x. Here I said it should solve for f. So I get the result for f. So f of x is this one, and f is this one here. So this is kind of a definition in terms of an expression, and this is a definition in terms of a function. Depending on what you ask for, you get a different result. It's really the same thing, but it uses these two different notations that I introduced earlier. An equation can have multiple solutions. So the result is not one solution, but a list of solutions. So the outer brackets bracket the list of solutions. Here there is only one solution, so the list has only one element. If you go further up here, here you see there are two solutions, x equals I and x equals minus I. Now, if you have equations of multiple unknowns, then you need to give multiple conditions. So each solution is kind of a list of definitions. And if you put it together, you have a list of lists for the individual solutions, which is a bit of an inconvenient notation, but you can easily use copy and paste or something, or use indexing operations to get the respective result. But the nice thing is that returning the result in this way works always, right? It works for systems of equations that have many variables and many solutions, and it uses the same format. Otherwise, if you use a different format, depending on how many solutions there are, that makes it complicated for you to actually extract the result in an automated manner. You can also define functions without using patterns. So if we say f of 1 equals 1 and f of 2 equals 3, then we're defining a function f. But f is really just the partial function, because we know the value of f only at two values, namely 1 and 2. So if you ask for f of 3, Mathematica doesn't know it, so it just returns f of 3, the unevaluated value. And if we ask for f of 2, then it actually remembers that. Yes?
Can you give conditions like f of x is x if x is bigger than 0?
Yes, yes, that's also possible. I think you use slash semicolon or something for that notation. I'm giving example for that as well. You can also mix the two. You can give a general definition and then also a specific definition for some values. For example, if you define a Fibonacci number, so factorial or something, you say f of 0 equals 1, and then f of n equals f of n minus 1 times n or something like that. And then it will use the specific definition if it applies, otherwise generic one. And then you automatically have the recursive definition. It's also how you would define the Chebyshev polynomials, for example. Right? The first two are given explicitly, and then the other ones are given recursively via earlier ones. It's probably complicated for Chebyshevs. Okay. Here I have an example for a differential equation where I give two boundary conditions. Should have written it like this. So we say f double prime of x equals x. And we're giving boundary conditions at 0 and at 1. And the result is this function here. It's probably correct. I'm too lazy to fill it in. 32 is such a large number. And you know the integration constants are gone. It is the same example that we used above, except there. Mathematica introduced integration constants. No, the integration constants have been determined by the boundary conditions. And if we leave out one of the boundary conditions, then we should still get one of the integration. Yes, C2 then survives. Oh, yes, in Mathematica, of course, there are these menu bars on top that allow you to do many things, but there are many key shortcuts. And some of them I learned by heart because I find them interesting and cool, and you'll probably also find that as well. So for me on a Mac here, it's Command and Slash. And if you highlight something and then hit Command Slash, then it becomes commented out. And if you do that again, then it becomes uncommented out. And... Yeah. Yes, so x plus 1 times x minus 1. If you just evaluate it, Mathematica doesn't actually simplify it. But let's take this one here. For me, it's command. For you, it might be option or alt or shift option or something. It's probably different for Linux, Windows, and Mac. The regular slash, the one below the question mark. You can also go to, what is it, edit, insert. Yeah, let's not spend time on that, but okay, but okay. I'm sure it's one of these small things that make things actually interesting. So here I have this minus 1 plus x and 1 plus x, and we can convert this to input, to input form. And input form means everything is written out explicitly with a star in between. There's normal form, where the star, well, multiplication star is hidden. There's traditional form, where it looks like in a textbook with this nice italic axis and so on. There's output, whatever that is, and so on. So these are different ways of displaying something, and there are also shortcuts for that. Yes?
Small question. Is it true that if I let Mathematica solve a differential equation for f, that he doesn't just solve it, but also actually assigns the solution to f?
No, it does not do anything like that. So this is, again, something that I'd like to call software engineering. Most of you might not be interested in that. But if you assign something to f, then you need to be very careful with using f in the following, because f has now a very specific meaning. It is like when you write sine of x. If you solve something and then have a solution for x, you might say x equals 42. And later on, you write sine of x, and then sine of x is suddenly not a function anymore. It's an expression, because x has the value 42. So you need to be very careful of when you assign something and when not. And this is why in... Pardon?
I just want to...
Yes, no.
Make a function f which solves that equation.
Yes. So what you have here is it says this function f solves that equation, but it did not assign anything to f.
So you can just say.
So what you can do is, for example, you write solution equals, and then you have this function, the result in a solution, and then with this double parenthesis, you can access part of the solution. So let's get the first solution, and then we can also write 1, 1, which is the first equation of the first solution, and that is then this function. And how can we evaluate it? Is it like that? Okay, let's go slowly. So I called the solution sol, which is the full solution with all these curly braces. Actually, dsolve returns a list of solutions, not just one solution. So with this double index notation, you get the first element of a list, which is the first solution. If you look at it, now there's only one curly brace, just the first solution. It's like getting the first element from a vector. Does it make sense? What do you not like? What do you not like? Okay. And now we want the first equation of the first solution, which is f of x. And then you can internally, you know the internal representation of this equation. The first part of that is f of x. The second part of that is the right-hand side. So we can take the second part of that, which is just the right-hand side. And then we can define f of x like this. It's a direct assignment. So we take the solution, look up whatever value it has, and assign it to f of x. And then we defined it. F of x is that, f of t is that, and so on. No, this defines a function. Okay. Okay. The solution is all of this, which is the one up here, and this is just. Oh no! I defined f. Huh? I need to clear it first. Okay. This is the solution, And this is not, this is essentially just, in Mathematica, this would be a pattern. So this doesn't define f, it just says if f has this form, then you have a solution. Yes?
You can just use a kind of time substitution rule.
Yes, thank you, thank you. Thank you, I didn't remember that. That's what I want to do, yes. So this is a substitution rule, a pattern matching rule, which I didn't introduce before. So you can write f of x equals f of x like this, right? Yep. So what this expression here is, it's this on the left-hand side is a pattern. If Mathematica outputs a pattern, you don't see the underscore. And this is what the pattern should be replaced with. And there's a pattern matching pattern replacement rule and the corresponding, sorry, operator, and that is slash dot. So if you write some equation, slash dot, and some a pattern matching rule, it will do some pattern matching and replacement on the left-hand side. So you can, for example, write 2x plus 3, 2x plus 1, which is this one, and then I say replace x with y, and then you get 1 plus 2y. This has nothing to do with mathematics, it just looks at the symbols and the expressions here on the left-hand side and does the replacement. You can also say that you want to replace 1 with 15. Okay, sorry. And then replace 1 with 15. It doesn't replace 2 with 30, right? It's just whatever is 1 is replaced. So this is it's purely syntactical. It has nothing, no knowledge about the mathematical meaning of an expression, but it's a rather powerful thing. Yes?
So you have like 21x plus 1, and then you replace 1 with 15. It wouldn't get to 200.
No, it would not. So 1, it just looks whatever is 1, the number 1. And 21, I mean, there seems to be a 1 in there because it looks like, but it isn't. And 21 is also not 21 times 1 that is then replaced or something. It is really just more or less a textual representation, but it takes the structure of the equation into account. I showed you the tree structure and so on, yeah. So this goes a bit further ahead than what I wanted to explain today, which is why I didn't introduce it nicely. It's minus and then larger equals. You type it like this, and then Mathematica will automatically replace it with something else as you add the next character. So here, the solution is given in terms of a pattern, and if we write f of x and apply this pattern, then we get the solution. Okay, let's keep this one here to go step by step. And now let's define a function. If sol of x, let's call it q of x to make things interesting. And so we're defining a function which now has a different name than when we used when solving it, because there's no reason to use the same name, right? Or instead of q, let's call it f solution. And we're defining this function as we're taking f of x, we're applying the solution, and we're doing that right away, right? There's no delayed evaluation, and then we're giving a function which we called f solution, which is this. So this is the proper way, thanks for the pointer, of defining a function based on the solution that you get from solving an equation. Okay, now as is usual in a tutorial, we jumped a bit over the place in the past hour, and I hope I didn't bore some of you and didn't lose some of you, but if you have a question or something is unclear, please interrupt me. Otherwise, I'll go on with the notebook. Okay, well, there's a tutorial in the afternoon where we can talk about this more, of course. So if you write an expression like x plus 1 times x minus 1, then Mathematica will not automatically simplify that expression. There's a simplify function which performs some canonical transformations that may or may not make the result a bit simpler. So then you get minus 1 plus x squared, as you'd expect from that expression. If you take this expression's input, there's also function factor that tries to factorize an expression. Then you get again x minus 1 times x plus 1. You know that Mathematica likes to sort terms in a particular way. So I write x minus 1, and here I get minus 1 plus x. You can also expand an expression, which is similar in this case to what Simplify did. And you can collect terms in expression. So you have an expression x plus y times x plus y plus 3. And we collect kind of powers of y. Then it looks like this. In the beginning, a term with no y's, then a term that is linear in y, and then the y squared term. We can also do a series expansion. So here we take 1 over x, expand, and powers of x. We expand around x equals 1, and we take the first 4 powers of x. And what does normal do? I don't know. Normal is something that has to do with series. I should know that. I think when you expand something in a series, you get a special series expansion object, and normal returns then converts that back into an actual polynomial. So let's do that. And this is the result that we're getting. And it's again sorted and bit in a strange way. So there is 2 minus x, term in x squared, x cubed, and x to the fourth. And of course, it's always x minus 1 that shows up there because we expanded around x equals 1. And what did I think here? We take this expression and we replace x by the term epsilon plus 1. This is, again, pattern matching and replacing something. Then we get something that now looks a bit more recognizable. Because wherever x minus 1 appeared, it's directly replaced by epsilon. We can also take the expression 1 over epsilon plus 1 and expand it in terms of epsilon around epsilon equals 0 up to 4 powers, which is, of course, the same thing, right? I mean, if it's just the same expression. We're just now calling the variable epsilon instead of x plus 1. And the result is the same thing. This is the original series object. And that also indicates that there is an error in terms of epsilon to the fifth power. If you call the function normal of that, then you get an actual polynomial that you can evaluate. And that big O notation goes away. OK, I don't have a good feeling whether I'm going too fast or too slow. If you know Mathematica, that should be boring. If you don't know Mathematica, I'm talking over your head. Well, you need to complain. The course is for you, not for me. So you can also put constraints on patterns. So here, f of x equals x squared. But this f will only match if x actually is an integer value. This is there are other kinds of putting constraints or conditions is something that we talked about. Then f of 2 is 4, and f of 2.1 is f of 2.1 because the pattern didn't match. So Mathematica doesn't know anything about it. This is also pattern matching and replacement. But here we have an actual pattern. So this is, we take 2, and this is pattern matches anything. The anything is replaced to anything squared. So this thing goes to 4. This is the expression from above. And we replace x minus 1 by epsilon. And
what do you mean anything?
Anything.
A syntax replacement.
Yes, it's a syntactic replacement. It matches anything in the syntax tree.
Like sine of something.
So in this case, it matches the whole thing, sine of 2, and returns the square of that.
Not like sine of 4.
No. It does work recursively, but because it matched, it doesn't do it again. So it walks down the tree until it finds something that it matches. And when it does the replacement, it does not continue. There is another repeated pattern matching and application where it continues to do that. That's sometimes useful. I don't want to do it here because it matches anything, so that thing would never finish. Hey, let's try what happens. It probably crashes. Oh, no, it tries it 60,000 times, and then it stops. So it was not very useful.
Whatever is left of
yes.
The higher expression.
Yes. It, by itself, that's not a very useful thing, but example, you could write x integer goes to x squared. And then it would look at the sine. Because sine is not an integer, it doesn't do anything. It descends down the tree, finds the 2, and then the 2 gets replaced by 4. So sine of 2 becomes sine of 4. Okay. Here are more examples about series and factorization. I'm going to skip them. You can look at the documentation. We have about 10 minutes or something left. So I also want to talk about how to do plotting and how to do graphics, because that's also interesting. If you have a solution, often it's so complicated, or maybe you needed to use some kind of numerical evaluation, that you just have a bunch of coefficients, you want to look at something. So graphics, let's look at plotting. You can plot the sine function, sine of x. X goes from 0 to 2 pi. You know how that looks like. Of course, it looks beautiful. And you can make that larger and smaller. And there are also other things you can do. Cut and paste, get chord, make standard size. Ooh, cool. Yes. And the plot function has probably 100,000 different options that changes how things are displayed. Here are some options. We can add a frame. The frame should be black. The background should be the RGB color 0.8.91. That's a bit reddish, a bit more greenish, and quite a bit of blue. Who knows what color that is? There you go. A bit more blue, I said. So it's actually blue. And there are many, many other options that you can give as well. You can have, this is a plot. Plot is plot of a 1D function. Of course, there are 2D plots, line plots. If you have things given in terms of a list, you can have bar plots and then pi plots and so on and so forth. Here you can do a contour plot. So the function is sine of x times cosine of y. The function depends on two variables. And x goes from 0 to pi and y from 0 to 4 pi. And if you plot it, a contour plot looks like that, kind of a nice density distribution. Here we don't have any labels. No legend at C, what color means what. Of course, there's another plot option to output that one as well. But I don't know offhand what that would be. Okay, I don't know why I wrote these lines, four lines down here. Maybe there was an earlier tutorial where people had questions. And now let's do a factorial function that is in answer of the question earlier. We define the factorial of 0 to be 1. And the factorial of n to be n times the factorial of n minus 1. And the factorial of 100 is this one. Well, I hope it is that one. You can also define the Fibonacci numbers. They are kind of, it's similar to factorial, it's additive. And each Fibonacci number is the sum of the two previous numbers. So the Fibonacci number of 0 is 0, the one of 1 is 1, and the Fibonacci number of n is given as the Fibonacci number of n minus 1 plus the 1 of n minus 2. And that thing here, where we define the function twice, is a trick. I'm going to explain that trick in a bit. Actually, let me take that part out because it's currently confusing. And then the Fibonacci number of 10 is 55. And the Fibonacci number of 1,000 is, can you guess what it is? It takes an eternity, probably more than the lifetime of the universe, to actually evolve that. Because each Fibonacci number is the sum of the two previous numbers. So you need to evaluate the two previous one, which is the sum of the two previous ones, sum of the two previous numbers. So if you evaluate that naively, you need 2 to the 1,000, which is 10 to the 300 evaluations, which is probably takes 2 to the 280 years to do or something. And that is entirely not feasible. So there's a trick for that. Whenever you evaluated something, you remember what you evaluated. And then, of course, you can evaluate the Fibonacci number of 1,000 in 1,000 steps because all it goes down to 0. And this is what this trick here does. This is a well-known trick in Mathematica that you should remember. It's called memoization. So this is a delayed evaluation. And what this does, at the moment, it only defines how the Fibonacci number should be calculated. But as part of the evaluation, it also defines what fib of n is. So if n is 10, then this defines fib of 10 directly via one of these XSplit definitions earlier. And if you evaluate, the result is there right away. because each time something has been evaluated, Mathematica remembers it. And what this did, it internally created essentially 1,000 definitions of the Fibonacci function for the integers from 0 to 1,000. Yes?
Why is the colon just the first?
Here? Yes. Okay. Maybe I should explain that on the blackboard a bit. So, what we write down here explicitly is the Fibonacci number of 0 is 0. Could you switch on the light? Maybe go to lecture? Then it's easier to read the blackboard. It's the left, the small one. Oh, no, yet. Yes, thank you. And there should be a bit of light then shining here. Good, now you can read it. So these are the definitions that we gave explicitly. And then there's also the innate definition for Fibonacci of n that is given in input 157 up there. And let's evaluate that for n equals 2. And if we evaluate it, since it's a delayed evaluation, the whole right-hand side will be evaluated. And the right-hand side reads then, can you replace it for n equals 2 and tell me what to write? So we evaluate the whole delayed definition, the whole right-hand side that, for n equals 2. So this becomes Fibonacci of 2 equals Fibonacci of 0. Is that right? Fibonacci of 1, Fibonacci of 0. So as part of the right-hand side of the delayed definition, actually the result is a new definition of something. So while something is evaluated, there's a new function value defined. And this Fibonacci of 2 is this. Of course, this one here evaluates quickly to the sum of these because these are known to 1. So since there's a new definition, Mathematica now knows that the Fibonacci of 2 is 1 as well. And this is now not a delayed definition. This is a direct definition. And in its internal table, where Mathematica remembers all the function values, this is a definition that is entered. And this was entered. And this is now a concrete definition. So if Mathematica next encounters Fibonacci of 2, it will not use the definition for n, the abstract definition here, but rather will use the more concrete definition here. And so on and so forth. And that is the reason why the first definition has the colon equals, because that is just a generic rule that we want to apply. And the generic rule then leads to a definition of the more concrete rules. And we want that to be evaluated right away so that it can be used directly. Okay, it's actually something rather deep and rather complex. I just wanted to throw it out there because of this important trick in Mathematica, but it probably takes time to get used to and experimenting before you grasp the details of that.
But when you evaluate 1,000, it still doesn't know the other values. So
yes.
Still agree
so, yes, it still has to go from 1,000, 999, 998, 997, and so on. But when it reaches 1, then the next thing, I mean, 1 was required by looking at the value for Fibonacci is 2, then it puts that 1 in, and then when it looks at the next definition, Fibonacci n minus 2 or something, then the values are already there. So it still has to do this long evaluation tree from 1,000 down to 0, but that is just 1,000 steps that can handle very quickly. But there's no double evaluation. Because first Mathematica, the other case, in the general case, first Mathematica would evaluate Fibonacci of 999, and then Fibonacci of 998. And of course, to evaluate 998, 999, 998 was already evaluated. Just Mathematica wouldn't remember it. Did you have a question? Okay.
So if you call Fibonacci 999 again, would it remember it or would it?
So since I evaluated Fibonacci of 1,000, and since this evaluation here evolved defining all the other Fibonacci values, currently Mathematica has 1,001 Fibonacci values directly defined internally. So if you looked at the amount of memory that Mathematica uses, it would have gone up by, I don't know, 10 kilobytes, but something probably measurable. And in principle, we should also be able to, would that work? Let me try it. Ah, too much. But 2,000 works? Yep. And 4,000 doesn't? Okay, here. Yeah. There's a recursion limit. So right, it has to go from 1,000 to 999, 998, and to limit, to prevent user errors, to catch them, there's a recursion limit of 1,000. So I can probably set a variable to increase the recursion limit significantly, and then I could evaluate Fibonacci of 10,000 or 1 million right away.
Can't you now you probably can do 4,000, right?
After yes, now I can do 4,000 because there's no recursion. Okay, let's just try that. Recursion def delta recursion limit. Here. Yeah. There's a function recursion limit, gives the current limit. Let's just increase it and see what happens. Yeah, that works. That didn't work. Okay, never tried that before. Anyway, it's almost time to end the lecture anyway. So I guess I see you this afternoon in the training room over there. What do you call it? The green room? No, what? Psi room. Okay, very good. Yes. And then we'll do something more interactive. Depending on whether you know Mathematica or not, that might be two groups. One group going through the basis, maybe repeating what we said today. And another group looking at some cool advanced feature, for example, image manipulation or capturing video or something. Okay. Thank you. See you then.